And our guest tonight, Peter Lavenda, he talks a bit about space travel in his work. So we'll talk with him about that and your phone calls in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast space travel. You bring it up, Peter. How come?
Well, space travel is kind of built into this whole system. When I've been looking at these different cultures, everybody talks about traveling to the stars. I mean, they're very literal about it. And at the same time, for them, space travel is a kind of a code word for spiritual transformation as well, as if the two things go together. And that got me to thinking that maybe they understood space travel to be something divine, which means that maybe they thought they had been visited by the gods or by God or by some divine being, and that in order to go back into space and to visit God, they themselves had to be somehow divine. They had to purify themselves. They had to go through all sorts of mystical practices in order to refine themselves, to be able to make the trip. The Chinese alchemists would do this. I mean, they would paint the Big Dipper on a piece of paper and progress each star in turn using special technology, special breathing, special meditations. So they thought that to travel to the stars, you had to be spiritually pure. And maybe that's a message for us. Maybe what we're trying to do with our technology is missing that one factor that the ancients believed was necessary.
The Egyptians, the pyramids are built, of course, and a lot of reasons why, but I do believe that they matched them up to Orion's belt at the time.
Yeah.
Again, the fascination with ancients with the heavens. But is that normal? I would assume if things were strange and unusual, we would look toward the skies.
Probably true. I mean, we look towards the skies now, sometimes looking for hope, looking for answers. We walk outside at night and stare up into the stars, and there's a sense of wonder. But I think that what I'm talking about is more detailed than that. It's a process. It's a, as I keep saying, a technology that was used by different cultures all around the world in precisely the same way. We're going to walk up star by star of these seven stars until we reach the pole star, the North Star, and that star is the throne of God. Even the Arabs, in the pre-Islamic period, talked about those seven stars, the Big Dipper stars, as a kind of a wagon, a means of transport, at the end of which was another grouping of stars of the Great Bear, the Ursa Major constellation, which they called the throne. So, I mean, there was this concept that you were going to take a chariot, you were going to take some kind of vehicle from the earth to the heavens and face the throne. And this was the same all over the world. So it wasn't merely that, you know, space has something to tell us or that it's mystical or that it's mysterious. They were very specific. They said, these seven stars going to this particular place, that's how you become immortal. That's how you change yourself. That's how you become spiritually transformed.
So you're convinced they knew something.
They knew something. They were all duplicating the same process. Everywhere I looked, I found the same process, as though there was a secret tradition being handed down from generation to generation. They were all adopting the same processes. It's unbelievable how identical these processes are. And I detail that in Stairway to Heaven, culture by culture. And I say, look at it. I mean, it almost becomes repetitive that each of these different cultures that had no contact were all saying the same thing, all doing the same thing. So there must be something that was handed down. How was it handed down to all these various different cultures, you know? That's the question I haven't been able to answer. Did it come down all at once, you know, all over the world, all at the same time? Was it handed down to one culture and they transmitted it to the others? At this point, I don't know yet.
Okay, let's go to the phones. You ready?
Sure.
Gary in Florida, east of the Rockies. Go ahead, Gary.
Good morning, George, and happy birthday.
Well, thank you. A couple of weeks ago, but that's all right. You
got it. Okay. Listen, the last couple of guests that you've had have kind of danced around, and for an example, they said even the elite would be deceived, not mentioning
right.
who the elite is. The elite would be the 12 apostles.
Now tell me a little bit more. They're gone, aren't they?
They're in heaven, or they're with Christ or God. Would it take your pick? They're in another dimension. But that's not the point that I was going for.
All right.
To me, that's what that meant, that the elite would be deceived, which would be the 12 apostles. Okay, taking that, then there were a couple of other things where Adam and Eve got kicked out of the Garden of Eden. Okay, where was that? Right here on earth.
Yep.
And didn't Adam walk with God?
We think it was on Earth. Some people think it was someplace else, but I think it was here.
Assuming that it was here, he walked with God, and which would be right here. Where is God today? He's right here in heaven or Earth. Take your pick, but in another dimension. That's where we get that, you know, that other dimension theory.
Well, you don't think then, Gary, that there was some kind of extraterrestrial confusion here, do you?
I'll say yes, but they're the fallen angels. I totally agree with, I think his name was Leonard.
From last week or so.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I believe that they're fallen angels because there's so much that Christ himself says that they are the tricksters. They will deceive you. And all these, let me just get to my bottom line. Okay, to me, God would have been and is the smartest human or the smartest living entity known to man. Why, if these aliens are so smart, why have they been playing this cat and game mouse? Like, hi, I see you, peekaboo. you know where I'm going with?
Well, all right, let's get Peter's take on that, Gary. Thanks.
Well, it's an interesting question.
It is. Well, why the peekaboo?
Well, we're judging their actions from our own perspective. You know, we're thinking to ourselves, well, if we were visiting a planet, we'd land down there and say, hi, how are you, and shake everybody's hand, or, you know, or kill them. I mean, depending upon who's sending up the rockets. But maybe a different civilization, a different race, has a different point of view. Maybe peekaboo is what they do, you know. Maybe they come down, they take a look, they back off. Maybe they're afraid of us for whatever reason, you know, and I can think of a few. So it may not be as simple as that. You know, it may not be that they're going to come down suddenly and bring us the bounty. They're not. This is not a cargo cult, you know. They're not going to land and give us the cargo out of their aircraft like I was mentioning before. They're going to fly around, they're going to take a look, and they're going to back in and back out. And maybe they're going to contact individual people as obviously they seem to have, you know, as John Mack was studying about the abduction phenomenon. People have genuine experiences of this. It doesn't have to be the President of the United States. It could be anyone. You know, it could be you or me. So there's a different agenda, and it's one that we don't appreciate yet because we're thinking in an old paradigm. We're thinking in an old way. We're thinking of conquest. You know, we're thinking of colonializing. We're thinking of a lot of things that we've done in the past. We're having a hard time thinking that people from another dimension, another planet, may just be coming down to take a look and go away.
You're aware of the Nazca lines in Peru, right?
Yes. Yes.
You know, the more I look at those pictures, the more I'm convinced that whatever the reason was that they were made for the gods to see them,
yes,
or from somebody above to see them.
I agree.
Now, who and what, I don't know.
I agree. I mean, this happens in cultures everywhere. If we think of the pyramids as being arranged for Orion, that may be another clue. There's a lot of strange building going on our planet since ancient times that seems to have been designed to be noticeable from space. And that's my point. Our religions began with this concept that we must go to space. I mean, our major religions since about 2000 BC were designed around this idea that we're going to space. We have a contact in the stars. And whether it's our standard religion, Christianity has it. St. Paul talks about, he mentions that he knows someone who ascended to the third heaven. Ezekiel, the book of Ezekiel is full of, you know, of this wild space vision that he has.
Jammed with it.
Jammed. I mean, this is what really caused a lot of Jewish mysticism since then was the book of Ezekiel. And then the book of Revelation is full of that. So we have a Christian concept of the ascension, of Jesus ascending bodily, of Elijah going up bodily, of Enoch in the Bible who walked with God and then went away with God bodily, which gave us the Enochian literature. There is a constant drumbeat of this. In Islam, the prophet went up to the seven heavens, and not in the Quran, but in the Hadith, in the special legends about the prophet. He claims that he went up the seven heavens. He was riding on a mystical animal, and he ascended that way as well. It's in every major religion. It's in Buddhism. It's in various Hindu traditions. It's in Taoism. It's everywhere.
Okay, next up, let's go to Deborah in Wisconsin. You're on Coast to Coast. Hey, Deborah.
Hello. Hello, George.
Hi.
Hello, Peter.
Hi.
Things have expanded somewhat. I first have to take issue with you, Peter, with respect to Aleister Crowley.
Yes.
He was, in fact, an evil man. He was a pedophile to boys, young boys, pre-puberty boys. So you got to dig deeper.
I don't know if that was that ever proven.
I never saw evidence of that. I saw a lot of stuff that he did, but the pedophilia.
He may have been accused. I'm not sure that they ever got him, though.
Yeah.
And the caller from Florida made a remark about the elite. The elite is not the apostles. The elite are those whose names are written in the Lamb's Book of Life.
Well, I can't help you there.
Not the apostles.
All right. Peter?
Well, I know my Bible. So I have to correct the gentleman on that. And when they're talking about those that deceive, those are the lambs and wolves clothing, even coming into the churches, who are there for power or their own purposes, not to really serve God.
Well, this is an interesting point that I should also bring out, because, George, you were talking about, you know, the aliens, are they evil, are they, you know, benevolent, and is there a difference between, you know, spiritual forces and ETs? And I think in evangelical Christianity, you have this concept of discernment and the ability to discern from looking at something like that, whether it is an angel or a devil, because under normal circumstances, we would not be able to tell the difference. So you need someone who has been spiritually trained. And that brings us back again to the mystical practices I've been talking about, the idea of lengthy fasting and lengthy purification rituals that have to precede experiences like this.
It's disappointing to assume that they would have evil intent. You would think that if they reached that level of sophistication to get here, that they'd be different. But I don't think that's totally the case. They could be.
They could have evil intent. I mean, I don't know, but nothing's happened so far that we can't see a cause and effect anyway, that they've done anything that, you know, is evil.
They're probably the ones causing global warming, right?
There you go.
Wildcard line, you're up with us. John in Minnesota.
Hi. I've always considered myself somewhat of an occultist.
Okay.
And I'm sure your guest is aware of Mr. Crowley's tarot deck that he created. And I'm always obsessed with the Baphomet creature. I'm sure he knows about that, too. And he said that Mr. Crowley doesn't believe in Satan. But he explains the Devil 15 in the tarot deck as being, you know, Baphomet. He's Baphomet, the horn god of Mendes. He's Satan. And he's love. That's what Mr. Crowley said about that, I think.
Well, in I believe it was in Magic and Theory and Practice, Crowley said that there is no such thing as a devil. If he really was the way the church had portrayed him to be, he would be a god, because he would have unity, as Crowley calls it, without getting too technical in Crowley terms. But he didn't believe in devil the way that Christianity believes in the devil. For him, this idea of the devil represented something else, maybe a reaction against Christianity, a reaction against Victorian times that he lived in. And the Baphomet thing, of course, is extremely complicated as well. Of course, his name was Baphomet in the OTO. That was a title that he gave himself, for the magical motto that he took, the magical name that he took. And that refers to the Knights Templar, again, and an idol they were supposedly worshiping. He was accused, the Templars were accused of worshiping this idol called Baphomet. And I think that was just a corruption of the name of Muhammad, according to the trial transcripts of the Templars. But that's another show, George.
Peter, also, tell me, how did you get involved with all this?
Wow.
What happened?
Yeah, really. Probably it goes far back to, well, I guess I grew up in the 60s, so in the Bronx. And so in the 60s in the Bronx, in those days, there was a lot of New Age stuff going on. There was a lot of occultism of various kinds. The Crowley people were not so much in evidence in those days, but the Wicca movement was coming along. There were a lot of independent practitioners of magic and Eastern religions, and all of this was taking place at that time that I was going into high school. So there was a lot of that in the air. And then I became fascinated with the darker side when I realized that David Berkowitz had gone to the same high school I did.
Did you dabble in it?
I didn't dabble in it in the sense of the way you're saying. I read a lot about it, and I had a lot of friends who were involved in it, and we talked a lot about it. And I had been involved in seances when I was very young, when I was still living at home.
Ouija boards, too?
Ouija boards, the whole nine yards. So all of that opened my eyes. I saw a lot of bizarre things back in the mid-60s.
Would you play with a Ouija board today?
No.
No.
No. But in those days, it was a kind of a channel. It was something people were doing. It was fascinating. The results you got were interesting, at least in the very beginning. And you get sucked into it. I mean, it was a very seductive thing. And it was, I would say, a kind of an evil thing. I mean, it sucked you in, and then it tried to keep you there. And it was stupid, eventually, and I had enough, you know, common sense to walk away from it, but others did not. And then I realized there was something really seriously powerful taking place here in this murky realm between religion and magic. There was something that was dangerous, something not to be toyed with.
West of the Rockies, Vernon in California. You're on Coast to Coast. Hey, Vernon.
Hi, how are you tonight?
We're well, thanks.
Good. I was listening earlier, and the gentleman you were then talking to has said something about a book, and I was wondering what the title of his book was.
Stairway to Heaven.
What?
Stairway to Heaven.
Stairway to Heaven. I have not heard or seen that.
Sounds like a song.
My thought was, I wondered if you have heard of the Illuminati tapes.
The Illuminati tapes?
Yeah.
You have to refresh memory. I've heard a lot of Illuminati stuff, and
it was in reference to Hitler and his background and the Jewish money that was actually behind Hitler. And I was wondering if you ever heard those tapes.
No, I don't think I have.
They were very interesting.
Who's on the tapes? Hitler?
I forget who was on the tapes. It's been a long time since I listened to them.
Well, Hitler had a lot of people deceived, that's for sure, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
I mean, that maybe it's part of the strength of being in the occult. I mean, he had a lot of people deceived.
Well, yeah, I mean, and some of the people...
Or they knew. I was going to say that. Or they also agreed with him.
Well, I mean, we had the famous case in our country, of course, with Henry Ford.
Yep.
You know, it was a major contributor to the early Nazi...
Well, was not the Prescott Bush the same?
Exactly. Prescott Bush. I mean, nobody talks about that much anymore, except on your program. But, you know, Prescott Bush was a major defender of the name. Our government had to close him down, you know, under the Trading with the Enemies Act. Because
through his bank, right?
Through his bank, because he was still continuing to deal with the Nazis even after Pearl Harbor. So, yeah. You know, sure. He had a lot of people either fooled or they were willing to go along.
Amazing. Truly amazing. Well, stay with us. We're going to come back. We're going to take final phone calls with you. Peter Lavenda, Floating Format, next hour, open lines on Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, we'll have open lines. When we come back, let's take final phone calls as we flip the format tonight with our guest, Peter Lavenda, right here on Coast to Coast AM. Peter, you mentioned it briefly, but how much did you get into astral projection investigations in your book, Stairway to Heaven?
Well, astral projection is probably one way of describing what these people were trying to do. I'm talking specifically about these individual mystics who attempted to travel up those seven levels to the center of the universe, essentially. We don't know. We use the term astral projection today. And looking back at what they were doing, that might have been what they were up to. They used their own, the idea about the purifications and all of the meditation, the prayer, was basically to condition the body itself as if the body was a vehicle or the body was a spacesuit, if you will, to enable the spirit or the soul or the interior consciousness of a being to raise up those different levels. So that's very, very similar to techniques of astral projection that are taught in the various books and in various secret societies today. The idea that the body itself first has to be purified in a certain sense. It has to be rid of toxins. It has to be in a relaxed state. And then you have to enter another state of consciousness in order to leave the body. And from the reports that we've read of these mystics, particularly the Jewish mystics who were doing this in the 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th century A.D., it appears as though if you touched one of these people while they were in this trance of going up to seven levels, you would harm them, which is basically what they tell you about astral projection, meditation, and all the rest. But there's a very tenuous link between the body and the spirit. And it seems that these practices were very similar to a kind of astral projection. It may be the original technology for astral projection.
Okay, back to the phones we go. Jason, east of the Rockies. Hi, Jason.
Hey, Jordan. Great to talk to you, man. Long-time listener, first-time caller. Good to talk to you and be with you guys tonight.
Good to have you.
Oh, thank you, man. It's a fascinating program, man. I don't mean to sound all jumpy, and I'm just excited to be on this program. I love it to death. Anyways, I'll be quick because I know there's a lot of callers. One of the things that I've personally been reading about is alchemy and hermeticism, and a lot of what your guest is talking about, I mean, it aligns perfectly with that. And, the idea of purification and, going through the seven steps, as consequently seven steps of alchemy that, it's not just a transmutation of lead into gold so much as, it's a transmutation of, I guess, the lead of, the drudging body to, the gold of divine communion, I guess. And it's, through, the essence of the spirit and all of it. Through certain, I could spend the whole evening talking to you about this. But I'm wondering, though, as far as Crowley went, I know he's a practicing hermeticist, too. In fact, I guess his tarot deck was called the Toss deck, I guess, the Tossing or the Toss.
Yeah.
And I didn't know exactly, because as far as I know, I've read that, that the Toss or Hermes Mercury Toss is, the father of alchemy, of science, geometry, and all this stuff. I didn't know what your guest take was exactly on the idea of thought is a form of consciousness that not necessarily an embodiment of a man, or as the Egyptians portray him as an ibis-headed man, but more of an idea of a point in the Akashic records that
sure, I understand what you're saying. Sure.
Thank you.
I mean, there's a chapter in my books, In Stairway to Heaven, about alchemy specifically and about the seven stages of alchemy.
And you talk about Chinese alchemy, too, as well, don't you?
I talk about both the Western and the Chinese versions, yeah. And they're both similar from that point of view. Your caller is right. I mean, alchemy is the art of spiritual transformation, which is the subtitle of my book. I mean, what it has to deal with is a processing of the spirit. And to do that, you have to start with the body, because the body has its own pull on the spirit. It has its own tugs on it, whether it's for hunger or for sex or for thirst or for whatever it happens to be. So training the body is a way of strengthening the spirit. So the alchemists, both the Chinese and the Western, were interested in spiritual transformation. And they called their process, they arranged it the same way in seven steps. Once again, it's seven levels of this refining process that would lead them to this transformation. There is a famous alchemical text called The Chemical Wedding of Christian Rosenkreuz. It was like the beginning of the Rosicrucian phenomenon. And that's very specifically about seven steps, once again, the seven stages. And it very closely mirrors the Jewish mystics, the Chinese mystics, and Chinese alchemists, and all the others.
See, when I was a kid, Peter, whenever I heard the word alchemy, I just thought it was always just these were chemists trying to turn something into gold.
Right.
Far more than that.
Oh, it's far more than that. I mean, and the alchemists themselves said it was far more than that. They said anybody who thinks that's what we're trying to do is mistaken.
Next up, let's go to Wildcard Line. Jason in Colorado. Hey, Jason.
Hello, George.
Thanks for calling.
I have a question for your guest.
Sure.
I heard a rumor that Aleister Crowley left behind a spell to be done in New Mexico after he died to open up a more able path to the spirit guide's lamb that L. Ron Hubbard and I forget who the other person actually performed right before Roswell happened. And okay. I wonder if he had heard anything about that.
Well, yes, since we're on that subject, it's an interesting part of it. It ties into what we're talking about. I don't know if we could say that Crowley left the spell, but what actually happened was L. Ron Hubbard, who, of course, was the founder of Scientology eventually, and a follower of Crowley's called Jack Parsons, they were together in the deserts in California, and they were conducting a spiritual experiment, you might say. They were conducting rituals in the desert, and they were conjuring various types of spirits right up to about the time that Roswell was happening. Jack Parsons was a rocket scientist. He was one of the co-founders of the Jet Propulsion Laboratory.
Jeez.
And there's a crater on the moon named after Jack Parsons. I mean, this was a brilliant rocket engineer. He was very influential in designing liquid fuel rocketry during World War II. So here was a guy who was brilliant, a brilliant chemist, a brilliant physicist, a person to whom we owe a lot in the space program. But at the same time, he was a follower of Crowley. He was a very serious follower.
Did he have a big following?
Crowley?
Yeah.
I don't know if I would say it was a big following. I mean, Crowley is more notorious than anything else. The actual people who were following him at that time in the late 1940s was actually quite small. In California, there might have been fewer than 100 people, I would say, who were actually members of any of the Crowley organizations.
All right, so that's nothing.
So it was very small, but yeah. Parsons was very influential in that for a while. He ran Crowley's operation in Southern California at that time. So here's a very influential guy who eventually called himself the Antichrist. I mean, that's the name he took on himself. So you see where his head was at. And he's working with L. Ron Hubbard, who had just gotten out of the Navy, who then eventually steals Jack Parsons' wife. I mean, Hubbard was already married at the time. This is a very strange story, and, you know, we can talk about Scientology a lot.
That's not a very spiritual thing to do.
Well, no. Took his wife, took his money, went to Miami, bought a yacht. Parsons went after them, regained, got back some of his money, but lost his girlfriend.
Or his wife, you mean?
Well, I don't know.
Whatever she was.
I don't know if she was married. They were married yet or not. No. But anyway, Hubbard married her, even though he was married to someone else at the time. And so he was committed bigamy right there. But anyway, you know, with that background, Hubbard initially used to talk in glowing terms about Aleister Crowley in the early days of his career with Dianetics and running Scientology from those experiences that he had with the Crowley people in California. So there was this attempt to conjure spirits with Hubbard and Parsons in the desert, in the Mojave.
What amazing story.
Yeah, it's fascinating stuff.
Next up, west of the Rockies, let's go to Ed in Oregon. Hey, Ed, go ahead.
Hi, George.
Yeah.
Hey, very nice to talk to you.
Thank you.
Yeah, Peter, my question really has to do with one of discernment.
Yes.
And, you know, George often has guests that talk about reducing the population. And I wonder if, you know, based on the negative effects that human beings have had on the planet and looking at a different perspective, say, one from the planet as opposed to from the human perspective, if it couldn't be possibly a good thing to reduce the population.
Okay. I think that reducing the population through, how shall I put it, natural means is probably a good idea. I think we are taxing, you know, the world's resources. But I'm speaking as a non-scientist on this and someone who doesn't have a lot of facts at his disposal to justify, you know, what I think. I just think that in general terms, one's reaction is that we're using the planet's resources up. The problem is, you know, how do you reduce, you know, the human population? I mean, you can do it with ZPG, with zero population growth. You can try to do what China has been trying to do, you know, to limit families to one child. But that leads us into all sorts of dire measures, drastic measures that are taken that we have a moral problem with. As I say, I can't speak as a scientist, so I can't come out and say, yes, this is a necessity, we have to do it now. And I can't speak as a moralist on this because I think it's a very thorny moral issue.
How do we explain the fact that so many past civilizations and cultures, Egyptians, Sumerians, Babylonians, Christians, Jews, Buddhists, all of them had similar views? How did that happen?
Yeah.
Was it shared? Were they told?
Well, again, you know, I have to say, again, we share so much in common. Our similarities are far greater than our differences. That you have to wonder if all of this came from a single source, or if is this built into us genetically? Is this a kind of a genetic understanding of how the world is supposed to work? You know, we know so little about how the genes work as it is. We don't know what they are. Some scientists have said we're nothing but machines for duplicating DNA. You know, that basically the DNA is the ghost in the machine, or the DNA is the pilot in our bodies that's guiding us to make the decisions that we make. This is kind of deep stuff, and there are no easy answers for it. From a mystical point of view, all of these civilizations that I've been looking at and talking about, from just one perspective of the seven stars and the passage, the stairway to heaven, they all share the same ideas. They all share the same processes for attaining it. The purification, the spiritual, the moral life that a person has to lead in order to attain this kind of understanding, to attain these experiences. So why would that be? You know, why wouldn't you have a group that has the same goal, but yet uses very immoral practices, you know, to get there, killing and raping or something, but they don't.
We were mentioning about the occult and the Nazis, and we were mentioning Prescott Bush, but he was also, didn't he also work for the prominent Democrat of the time, W. Averill Harriman?
Yes, I mean, Averill Harriman.
Harry, were they all involved in this?
Well, yeah, I mean, it looks as though Averill Harriman was involved, along with Bush and with, George Herbert Walker, who became, you know, I guess it was grandfather of George Herbert Walker.
Yeah, yeah.
Sure, I mean, they were all in the boat together on this one. You know, Averill Harriman was definitely part of that banking operation that was closed down by the government.
Truly, man, there's more than meets the eye, isn't there?
Absolutely.
First-time caller, let's go to Florida. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi.
Yeah.
How are y'all doing?
We're good.
We're good.
It's Peter and George?
Yep.
Or George
Dina
and Peter.
Here.
Go ahead, Dina. Your clock is ticking. Go,
okay,
go, go.
Okay, I wanted to ask, I had an experience where, I don't know if I was listening to the song Stairway to Heaven, but there was this formation of clouds that came down into the form of a staircase.
When?
Could you explain that to me? It was back around probably 1994. It was when I first started learning of the occult and looking more into it, delving into, you know, the books and trying to find out more about it. And as well, I heard y'all speaking about the pyramid and the point of Polaris, which is the North Star. And I've also experienced where I've looked up and the complete sky looked like a pyramid, like from that one point. And then there was the three triangular, you know, points coming down to the...
I don't know if Peter can address that.
All I can say is it sounds like it was a message to you.
Right, right.
By whom, though? That's the question.
Well, how did you react to it? What did you do with it? I mean, what?
It was like any other experience I've ever had like that. I was kind of fearful, and I didn't know how to react, and there were other people around me. And so I just kind of sat still and just, you know, glanced at it and just was like, am I really seeing this? Or, you know, what is it? I've also seen the dove in the sky, you know, that symbolizes the peace dove or, you know, Christianity,
right,
or whatever.
Hmm.
I've seen that as well. And so there's been a lot of experiences that I've had, and as well as seeing a UFO. And, you know, so there's a lot of things, and, you know, you can't tell too many people because they'll think that you're crazy or, you know, not understand, and that's why it is like a secret society, you know?
Yeah, I hear you. How has it affected your life, though? Have you,
Peter, by the way, where do you get your book? Well, the clock's going to get us pretty soon.
Oh, my book, sure. Stairway to Heaven. You can get it at all the usual suspects, at Amazon.com, of course, Barnes & Noble. I think a number of stores are carrying it as well, around the Barnes & Noble, of course, Borders, places like that, you'll find it, or online with Amazon.com.
Phil in Washington. Go for it, Phil.
Hi, I'm a graduate of the Ancient Egyptian Mystery School. I think the Flower of Life would be a symbol representing higher ideas. Let's say there's a central universe. Thought would be the most subtle emanation of a source that is actually the source of everything. Sound vibration, we've just recently discovered, is the cause of the spinning of the fundamental particles, which we're just picking up in quantum mechanics. DNA then becomes a template around which the formless energy forms. Yes, it's all intelligent. This is, let's say, the culmination of the first universe would go into the creation of the second, and we're in the seventh. Yes, there are shared ideas. There's a book that I think you would radically benefit from. It's called The Theohouba Prophecy, T-H-I-A-O-O-U-B-A. It describes the stewards of the ninth level being stewards of the populated planets, which would represent one atom of one molecule of one water drop in all the oceans. They're extraterrestrial races gathered around Earth because what's occurring here has actually never occurred anywhere. The DNA library on this planet is probably the most dense and most valuable resource in the local supercluster. I just wanted to lend that because there are people that need this information. Wingmakers, www.wingmakers.com, recently came out with a new event temples that is holding sessions at 6 a.m., 11 a.m., 6 p.m., 11 p.m. Pacific time. You can go to http://event.
Okay, we're not going to keep giving out websites all night, but we get the point.
Okay.
We get the point. Peter, as you look at all this, where does your new research take you?
I'm presently deeply involved in a book on Freemasonry, particularly the influence of Freemasonry on America, on the founding of the country, but also some of the early background of Freemasonry. I'm struggling with the origins of it, trying to show what really was at the heart of it, talking about sacred geometry, and going up to the Mormons, quite frankly, and the involvement of Joseph Smith in Freemasonry and in occult practices when he was a child in upstate New York.
Freemasonry, that's going to be an interesting one, too.
I hope so.
All right. Thanks, Peter.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate you being part of the program. Peter Lavenda. Now, when we come back, we've got an hour of open lines for you in this floating format tonight. And then the last hour, we're going to play an old Art Bell 1999 interview with George Carlin, who passed away over the weekend. Great comedian that he was. I'll be back in a moment. Open lines next on Coast to Coast AM.